Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another of the most scintillating hours in finance radio. And for those of you that are new to this, no, I am not that self-involved. I believe we, but look, there's just not a lot of finance radio. And I say this all the time, right? It's my favorite race. It's a one horse race. There's certainty in that. It's a race we can win, gosh darn it. So anyway, great to be back today. Got a good show planned for you today. Weren't able to pull together the interviews, and one of the reasons is my fault. My wife surprised me with a little two-night trip out of town to a little resort not too far from our home, and kind of a fun place for us to go as a family, and then, you know, get away with the spouse every once in a while and realize, hey, there is life outside of kids and T-ball games, and or not T-ball anymore, Little League games and practices and music lessons. And hey, I remember talking to you. Anyway, so, and then I was trying to hook up with Cuppy. You guys know Cuppy. He's been on the show several times. He runs a hedge fund. He's become a friend of the show and a buddy. And we were trying to make it happen. He's living the life of Riley though. He's on a boat on vacation somewhere in the Bahamas. And we were still going to try to make it work together, but it truly is like two ships passing in the night. I'm doing the show from a hotel room. He was trying to call in from a boat. I'd much rather have his problem. I'd much rather be trying to call in from a boat. But, you know, there's only one Cuppy, man. He's living the life for us. So anyway, you're going to have to make do with just me today. But that's good because I've got some things I want to talk about. And I was saying this, again, for those of you that don't know us, the show started in Seattle, and we still air it on two stations in Seattle. And the first station it started on was 770 KTTH. Why this works this way, I'll never know. But KTTH has an extra 3 minutes that none of the other shows do. You'd think it'd be all uniform, but it's not. So anyway, every week I do a little three-minute open. Only the OGs of Know Your Risk Radio, that was the first radio station that we ever launched on, they were the only ones that get to hear it, and I'm sure that's killing you guys. Right? We got to get our missing 3 minutes back, man. You're getting robbed. No, but all kidding aside, we do that intro with them. And so when I get with you guys, it's the start of the real show, getting into the market update. So what I was saying was, like I was teasing on that 3 minute intro, we're going to talk about the Fed. Now, don't turn the channel. Don't tell me, hey, Zach, you always talk about the Fed. Look, guys, if we could just sit back and talk about discounted cash flows and price to earnings ratios and price to sales and macroeconomics and oil production and palladium production and copper exports and imports, if we can get back to those days, sign me up, man. I'm the first guy on that train. Okay. The reason we can't, and I don't want you guys to think I'm fixated on the Fed. I'm not. But as a guy that manages money, I'll just tell you that if you're not constantly watching that, you're missing the boat because they're the biggest game in town. And to some extent, that's not new, right? I mean, for instance, you know, go back to World War II. Government was playing a pretty big role in the economy at that point. That was a war economy, so it's a little bit different. But I mean, government's always played a big role. What I'm talking about is I'm talking about direct interventions in markets. There used to be a bit more sanctity surrounding markets. Meaning, you know, like for instance, if you go back and read Fed data or Fed minutes in 08, 09, and if you remember throughout 08, 09, you heard a lot about bazookas, right? Bernanke wants to go out there with a bazooka. He wants to have a big effect on the market. Well, it's interesting now. You don't hear that term anymore. And you know why? Because bazookas become the new sidearm. That's just a pistol now. Right? We do stuff like that all the time. And I think it kind of gives you an interesting insight, right? Just 13, 15 years ago, we called it a bazooka. Now, a lot of times, doesn't even make the evening news. And I mean the federal interventions in markets. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Just think about the difference in the reception to the $350 billion BTFP plan that they used to bail out the banks in 2023, last year. Think about the difference in the reaction from the country when you compare that reaction to TARP. And remember, TARP was only TARP in 08, 09 that they used to bail out all the banks. That was only 2.5 times larger than BTFP, the Bank Term Funding Plan program. And I just think that's fascinating. But I also think that it gives you some insight into markets, which is we're not talking about the Fed because I'm fixated on them. Really, I'm not. And people would be like, Zach, come on, man. You're always going off. I am, but I'm fixated on them because you got to be. Like I said, they're the only game in town. People are like, that's not true. Look, I'm not saying there aren't other dynamic aspects of the U.S. economy. I'm not saying that all we are is the Fed. I'm not even one of those guys that's going to sit there. And look, I know this will tick off some of you when I say this. I'm also not one of those guys that said if the Fed quits pumping, our whole economy collapses. Would it be bad? Yeah, it'd be bad. It'd be really bad. Would we bounce back eventually? Yes. And that's one of the things that irritates me so much about this, right? It's just like life. You know, you take the medicine up front, right? You take the pain up front, and it's never fun, but you get through it and you go on. And one of the easy ways to look at central bank policy specifically, and I'm too hard on them because a lot of times they're given the ingredients by the federal government, right? They have a choice of how they want to make it or maybe what dish they want to make, but they're given the ingredients by the federal government. So it's not all their fault. All that being said, if you're not acknowledging that the biggest spigot of capital, the combination of the Fed and the U.S. government, watching what they're doing and knowing what they're doing, especially in a period of time like this, is invaluable. And I think a really simple way to illustrate it is this. You got the economy growing at 3.2% and you're running 7% deficits. Right? Like, you normalize those deficits, your growth rate, you're in recession. Right? So now, it's not that simple. Okay, I'm oversimplifying it, but not really. I'm oversimplifying it, but I'm not lying about the numbers. I don't lie, but I'm not stretching that. Again, there's more dynamism to that whole system than I'm making it sound like. But in a way, you can just sit there and go, well, man, yeah, you're running at 3.2% growth and you're looking at 7% deficits. If you weren't spending that much, you'd be shrinking, right? So in that scenario, you should probably spend an inordinate amount of time fixated on the source of that 7% deficit. And that is the federal government. That's not the Fed. Right? But the other very important inflow into the market is the Fed. What are they doing with their balance sheet? What are they doing with interest rates? And so we're not stuck on this because we want to be. We're stuck on it because we need to be. And getting into more of the market update, I just want to put that out there just so people have a really big, good understanding of, is Zach Fed obsessed? No, well, why are we talking about it so much? Just because it matters that much. The other thing we're going to talk about today, we're going to take a little bit of an administrative turn. I'm going to talk about income planning. It's something that I can admit in our process isn't front and center enough, not in terms of do we do it? Of course we do it. Do we talk about it enough to our clients? Do I talk about it enough to you guys on the show? And the answer is no. It's one of those things that I've realized is sort of a hole in. And even with our own clients, we don't talk about income planning enough. Now, that being said, I think income planning gets a little overhyped, and I'll get into what I mean by that. But it is an important part of it. It's a very important part of it. How and when you take certain levels of income, where you pull them from. So we're going to get into that today too in retirement. That question comes up all the time. But anyway, getting into the market update, there's two things that really caught my eye, and I think they're connected. And we've been talking about this on the Daily Dots, so this won't come to a surprise to you guys. But I don't want to make too much out of it right now. But the move in gold is really eye-catching. And obviously, it's got to continue, right? But when that move has coincided with Bitcoin going to new all-time highs, I think it's telling you something. Then you turn around and look at the dollar. And the dollar's still hanging in there. But when I look at what's going on in gold, and now oil's starting to perk up too, which is interesting because I don't really envy the Fed right now. The Fed knows that all of this roaring hot economy stuff is nonsense. Okay, but the economy is still growing. But you've got some interesting headwinds right now. Remember, all those really good economic numbers have been fed off the back of $65, $70 oil, right? Gas went way down. It's going back up. And it's getting up there again. Oil's at 85, I want to say, is where we closed yesterday. 85, somewhere right around there. But it's even more than just the commodities. Watching usually what you see, guys, in moves in markets. And when I say moves, like a sector, you see signs, right? Different parts of the sector start perking up. First of all in all, I think it's pretty admirable how commodities, generally speaking, and energy companies, the shares of any company, energy companies specifically, I think it's notable how they've hung in there over the past year and a half when oil did get drilled and there was downward pressure on commodities. And they proved very resilient. Where in the past, you know, you get a plummet like oil. Well, I don't want to over-dramatize it, but it just, in the more recent past, you just felt like that would have led to a really violent, nasty sell-off. Now, the valuations are extraordinarily compelling. The balance sheets are so much better. And that's another thing. I think we've been talking about this a long time. I think with a lot of these commodities in the energy sector specifically, you're certainly seeing more resiliency in the price of those things. And I think you're also just seeing the market awareness of the fact that these things are much different now. We talked about the energy companies specifically, how, yeah, they're doing better and they're making a lot of profit and they're functioning better. But one of the things I don't think people are really looking at, and the way it could, you know, the way it's changed the dynamics of the energy complex, generally speaking, here in the United States, is these companies are in better financial positions than they've ever been. The vast majority of them. Debt in the sector is the lowest I've ever seen it. I wouldn't say the commodity sector is quite as clean. You see a lot more indebtedness, but man, they're running lean. And that's the other thing too. You get gold prices doing this and you look at oil. Now oil's picked back up, but you know, you're nowhere near the nasty highs. You know, $80 to $85 oil and $2,200 gold. Those are pretty good conditions for the average gold mining company. And here's what's exciting about the move in gold. Remember, generally speaking, and you know what? I should go look at this as it relates to other commodities. I wonder if it plays out like this in other commodities. But generally speaking, for gold companies, the miners, if you watch an index, they're usually going to move 4x the underlying commodity. Now, not over the short time. You know, you've seen them not track the commodity for short periods of times. You can see periods of times where they go up 3x what the commodity does, 5x. Over time, usually that average goes right around 4x. So if you told me over the next 2 years, gold was going to go up 25%, I'd feel very comfortable, you know, placing a wager that the mining companies are going to be up 100% or close to it. So, and that's just the natural. I told a story in 2015, at the end of 2015, when the Fed hiked rates for the first time. We'd had a trade set up for a while. We talked about it on the Dots this week. But at the time, there was so much belief in the industry when the subject of gold came up. People would say, well, gold can't go up when interest rates are going up. We thought that was nonsense. There's plenty of times where that's happened. But one of the things you learn in this business is when everybody in the industry thinks something, like, don't stand there and fight to them. Just wait till the point where they get until it gets disproven, and then jump on the trade, right? Don't fight the wind. Don't fight the tide. So we said, look, we think it's the exact opposite. We think when the Fed hikes the first time, it's going to be a classic sell the news type scenario, meaning that's when you should get long gold. And we said, okay, if gold's green 2 days after the first hike, we're going to jump all over it. We did. Gold ended up rallying 25%. And I think GDX, don't quote me on this, but I think over that same period of time, GDX was, I'm virtually positive, was up over 100, and 109% sticks out to me. So like I said, it can be a little noisy at times. Anyway, getting back to the story, why do I think this is all significant? Because if you go look at the dollar, the DXY, the dollar index, again, that's just the dollar being measured against a basket of other currencies, right? So euro, yen, Chinese yuan, that kind of deal. I think it's mostly the euro. That's the biggest weighting. But it's giving you an indicator of how the dollar is doing versus other indexes. If you look at that, it's at 104, kind of right in the middle of a range. But when you see commodity moves like this, when I'm watching what commodities are doing and what crypto is doing and what Bitcoin is doing, that this is exactly what I would expect to see at the beginning of a downward cycle for the dollar. And it usually, why it happens that way, well, it's because investors are trying to get to, investors ideally want to go where the market is heading, right? We want to skate to where the puck is going. But it's just, it's very interesting. And a lot of market practitioners will know what I'm talking about. It's very interesting how you will almost always see evidence of something happening in the proximity. Meaning if a commodity is going to break out, a lot of times you will see things that are positively impacted by that breakout move before that breakout actually happens. Like it's predicting it, kind of. And it just, again, practitioners and traders know exactly what I'm talking about. And when I look at what is moving right now and what is moving the hardest, it just looks to me, and I could be wrong, but it just looks to me like the market is front running a breakdown in the dollar. And when I say a breakdown in the dollar, all of this weak dollar and the dollar's plummeting talk, let me give you a little perspective on the dollar here. I believe the DXY, the dollar index, at the end of 2011 was trading at like 72, 75, somewhere mid-70s. It's at 104. Think of what our debt has done since 2012. Think of what our deficits have done since 2012. Think of what the Fed balance sheet looks like since 2012. And over that period of time, the dollar's up like 50%, 45, 50%. There's another anecdote, they're not anecdotal. There's another firm fact to back up what we've been telling you guys. Inflation and dollar collapse aren't the same thing. Go pull up the dollar. I mean, it couldn't be the furthest from a collapse. I mean, it's the furthest from a collapse. It looks like a rock, but you pull up the chart and just 4.5% or so below current levels is where a long-term trend line is. Or that maybe that's the immediate one. Anyway, nobody knows for sure, but we're watching that dollar index like a hawk. And with this move we're seeing, like you said, in commodities, gold, Bitcoin, oil now, it looks to me like the market is front-running that dollar breakdown trade. And if that occurs, Katie, bar the door. You look at something like gold, you get, how much could the dollar fall? Well, in 2012, the Dixie was at 20 or at 72. I'm not saying it's going back there, but it's got, could the dollar fall 15 to 20% over the next 2 years? Sure. Then you look at the other things, the deficits, what the Fed's, you're starting to look at stuff like gold and just going, man, I feel like the potential for something really saucy to happen with gold, And if that occurs, probably with silver as well. Dynamics with silver are a little bit different, meaning central banks around the world aren't buying it hand over fist. But silver always gets doubted. Usually gold moves first and silver plays a vicious game of catch up. But we may be there. I'm not telling you to go out and buy this stuff. I'm not telling you to go to load up. What I'm telling you is we got another really – this is why we started doing the dots, guys. And I know I'm a hardcore finance nerd, but this is where we're at. I mean, you got momentous, long-standing stuff, right? Stuff that could have decades implications happening on a daily basis. And I'm just telling you, look at these moves. Gold breaking out to a new all-time high. You get that dollar about 4 to 5% below current levels, and you could start seeing some fireworks. You may see them anyway, regardless of direction of the dollar. And why do I say that? Well, I mean, go look at dollar in oil, right? For what it's been, I don't know, better part of 2 or 3 years where those things have been moving in lockstep. So getting to what the most important part of the market update this week was just more Fed confusion, which makes it harder to predict what's going to happen to that dollar index that we're talking about. Because Harker came out. We talked about this on the dots. Was it Harker? Chase is going to be mad at me if I screwed that up. I believe it was Harker, one of the other FOMC members on the Federal Reserve, came out and basically said not the opposite, but kind of what Jay Powell said just a week and a half ago. Now, I thought Harker made a lot more sense. Because Powell kind of had this attitude, well, devil may care, we're gonna cut and everything's fine. But Harker acknowledged more weakness. Now, why I think that's really interesting is other countries around the world have begun to cut rates. And whether we do or whether we don't, I think is going to have a lot to say on which move the dollar makes. But right now, guys, you know, I think with what we did, the message hasn't changed from us. And with all the money printing, look, anything can happen in markets. And that's why we got to be constantly managing risk, especially for retirees, right? Especially in these markets. I mean, anything can happen. And that's always somewhat the truth, right? That's always somewhat the case. But at this point, it's very much the case. So we've got to be managing risk. But at the same time, when you look at the fiscal setup, you look at the debt, you look at the deficits, you look at all that stuff, it's just really hard to see the market really going down in a really meaningful way from here. Now, caveat emptor, guys. I am not advocating you go load up here either. I'm not telling you to get long and strong. Again, we got to manage risk. But what the Fed does, and depending on what they can do in terms of cutting or hiking or whatever, it's going to have a big impact on the dollar. And I think the dollar is really going to determine what the next, I don't know, extended period of time looks like. A couple years at least, maybe 5, maybe 10. But I just think that dollar breaks below that 99 level on the dollar index, and it's kind of a Katie bar the door scenario where I think things could get really saucy. So as always, guys, you notice that I'm bringing up the necessity of risk management always. I just think it's crazy if you do not have some kind of defensive strategy or protective strategy built into these markets, especially if you're close to or in retirement. If that interests you, which I think it should, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, boardcapitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. Stick with us through the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
With the election looming, continued global unrest, rising cost of living, and this crazy market volatility, the rest of this year could be a wild ride. Protecting retirement portfolios with risk management is critical.
That's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark and host of Know Your Risk Radio's podcast. Zach, at our first meeting, Bulwark opened my eyes to how exposed my portfolio really was.
We do that with everyone. Our Know Your Risk portfolio review is a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. It's free and there's no obligation. In fact, we don't let anyone invest with us at our first meeting.
Whether you become a client or not, I can promise you this, you'll leave much more informed about the risks to your retirement.
I know I did. Look, you only get one retirement. Don't risk it. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you so much for sticking with us. So I want to take a little bit of turn. And for the finance nerds out there, for the econ nerds or whatever, stick with us because this is important too. You know, it's funny when you do a segment like this because you're like, I know a sector of the, you know, I know a sector of the listening base is going to love this. They think we probably should do more of these. And there's another sector that's like, oh, come on, man. I don't want to hear about retirement income planning. But it is important. And it's something that we haven't spent nearly enough time on. And that's on me. And I will admit, I'm not sure if he's if I say this, he probably won't. But good friend and client of mine, Tom, we were having a talk recently. Actually, this week, about retirement income planning. Now, Tom's been a client and friend for a long time. He and I talk on a fairly regular basis. And his questions kind of caught me off guard. Not in a way because we didn't know the answers. We didn't have answers or even that it wasn't taken care of. But it opened my eyes to something, which is I don't think we've done a good enough job talking about this. Talking about retirement income planning. We focus so much of our time on the assets and managing them and the investment side of it, which is, and I'll still say this, okay? At the end of the day, there is nothing more important than the performance of your investments. And by performance, I don't mean just up, right? But meaning, you know, performance in up and down markets, right? How much volatility, how much risk, how much do you have, you know, all those kinds of things. And nothing is more important than that. Okay, but the second most important part, and it's a ways below, the second most important part is the income planning. How do we take it? When do we take it? How do we manage that? Because it can make a massive difference over the long run. And, you know, part of it is tax minimization. But I just want to be clear. It's one of the reasons, and I'll just be honest with you, one of the reasons that we focus so much on the investing side is because of how much other firms focus on the income planning and retirement planning side of it. And what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is they're placing so much certainty or they're placing so much emphasis on the part of the job that they can provide certainty with, right? Meaning so many of these financial plans and these financial planning software and all that kind of stuff, so much of them, they're not bad. Right. But they're not. I mean, if we're making a financial plan, let's say 25 years out, and if we put in 3 or 5% inflation, the impact that has is massive. So I don't think that they're a bad thing to do, but I think that they're used inappropriately. I think that they are used to provide certainty where there is none. I mean, I can show you in retirement plan after retirement plan and not necessarily bad. But just that the plan, you know, the result and the plan were completely off. Or the minute something like inflation pops up, the plan has to change drastically. And at the end of the day, like I said, is having a plan and a strategy in place, yes, it's important. But also, it kind of can overcomplicate things. What do I mean by that? In its most simple way, if we want to describe it the most simple way possible, the more money you have, the better your retirement's going to be, right? So, of course, the primary focus should be on maximizing that risk and growth potential, right? Building that up as much as we can while managing the risk side of it and while not being overexposed to risk. And when I mean risk, the kind of risk that would threaten the income capabilities of that portfolio, the income plan, right? But like I said, it's still important. And it's one of the reasons, and I'm not denigrating these firms, but when people are really pushing the income plan and retirement plan hard, what you usually know is they're going to put you in a robo deal. They're going to put you in a program that just automatically rebalances your portfolio once a quarter, once a year, whatever interval they decided to works best based off the most recent study they read about it. And that opinion is usually going to change in the next 2 years because a new study comes out. But they're selling the plan as a way to hook you. I know this because I was at the firms when these plans launched, these Monte Carlo simulators that they tie into these financial planning software tools. But like I said, now that's my disclaimer about income planning and financial planning. I think it's important. And the other thing too, guys, I want to separate this discussion, income and financial planning, from estate planning. Totally different deal. Okay. I think estate planning, well, I think it can be oversubscribed. I mean, I see people get estate plans that don't really need them. But for people to do, they absolutely do. And the estate plan is very important. Okay. So I want to make a distinction there. But on the income planning side, we have probably, like I said, we've kind of overshot our mandate, meaning we've probably been a little bit too aggressive or we've been underrepresentative regarding our discussions with our clients and on the radio show regarding income planning and the importance. And what do I mean? Okay. Of course, I don't have the ability to sit here and give you the income planning method that will work for everybody, right? Well, as always, there's always the pleasant present or the normal disclaimer, right? If everybody is different, and it's true, there isn't one way to do it. But I do think that there are some general principles about income planning that we can all learn from, and that I think all advisors should keep in the front of their mind, and that should play massive factors in an income plan. And this is also stuff that people, home gamers at home doing it on their own, I think they can benefit from this stuff too. So first and foremost, let's start with the basis of most retirement income plans, Social Security, right? When do we turn on Social Security? The answer is when you need it. Okay, so I think let's go back to what Social Security is. Social Security insurance. Okay, it should be used like insurance. What do I mean? And I've talked about this before. I get very irritated whenever I hear somebody in this profession talking about maximizing Social Security. Because usually what that means is deferring it as long as possible. But that's not true maximization. Maximization should be extracting the most money possible out of Social Security. Not the most per year, the most total. And we also need to factor in tax implications. And what do I mean by that? Well, some people have the opportunity to turn on Social Security while they're working. Should they do that? Usually not. Why? It stops the growth of Social Security and it just adds to your income tax liability. Again, not only do you get a smaller payoff amount in the beginning, but you're going to get a bigger amount knocked off because of a higher tax rate. And you're losing on both ends, right? You're not going to extract as much. Your payment is smaller. And you're also, at least in the beginning, while you're still working, you're also taking a bigger chunk out of it than you otherwise would be on the income tax side. The primary reason, though, that I get frustrated about people talking about maximizing Social Security is it usually comes at the cost of their portfolio. Which is also kind of weird to me when I hear advisors say that, because you'd think in their own self-interest, like, now, don't get me wrong, I don't think advisors should act in their own self-interest. But there's a lot of times in this business that I think it's all the time. May not be in the immediate time, but we're doing the right thing for the client also happens to be the best for the advisor. And anything that keeps money in the advisory account is good for the advisor and the client, right? I think a lot of times these people talk about Social Security maximization as kind of a hook, a marketing tool to get people in to talk to them. As a matter of fact, I know they do that. One of the most popular seminars out there is, they're not bad. There's good, they relay good information about Social Security. But how should we be using it? We should be using it to protect your assets. And what I mean by that is we should be thinking about it not as an investment, but as a lever to pull to allow us to rely less on our invested assets. And why is that? Because we know what Social Security is. It's a pile of money that quits growing at age 70. And after that, it does not grow anymore. And it is what it is, right? Whereas every dollar you have in your investment account, if left there, it has an infinite growth capability, right? So we're like, well, it's costing me $3,200. And I'm like, well, It's costing you a lot more than that. Not only is it costing you $3,200, but it's costing you forever the growth and the productivity of that $3,200. Right? So how do we look at that? Well, we look at it pretty simply. Now, again, everybody's different. If you get somebody that retires really early and can't take Social Security, that changes the parameters. Okay? But generally speaking, if you have a portfolio, let's say you have a conservative portfolio that's designed to make 7-8% a year, okay? In that situation, we'd like to keep clients' withdrawal rates between 3.5% to as high as 4.5% a year, again, depending on their individual situation. And if that 3.5% to 4.5% a year is funding your income adequately, right? And the portfolio is growing at 7-8% or a greater clip than that on average, and you don't need Social Security, then let it keep growing, especially if you're under the age of 66, because from 62 to 66, it appreciates, the Social Security benefit appreciates by 12.5% a year. After 66, it goes down to 8%. It could be 12.5 and 8. I'm pretty sure. It's a small possibility it's 8.5 and 12, but anyway, you get the idea. A lot of numbers running through my head. The other thing that's been hard is there's been a lot of changes with Social Security rules over the last 5 to 10 years. It's hard to keep up on it. You know, Roth contribution limits, all that kind of stuff has changed a lot. But anyway, especially between 62 to 66, because that income base is growing at 12.5% a year. Your portfolio is still growing at a rate that's at or outpacing inflation despite your withdrawal rates. And as long as that continues, keep letting it get 12.5. Now, once we hit 66, the math changes. Again, if you're working, I'm still going to tell you to defer it. It doesn't make sense to take the tax hit most of the time. But hold on. There is also a situation. If you don't have adequate retirement savings, you may want to keep working. Do you guys get what I'm getting here? This truly is where the whole custom part of this really needs to come in, because there is no one good answer. Okay. But here's what I do know for everybody. We need to look at Social Security the way it is, Social Security insurance. We're using it to insure our liquid assets. So if we take a hit on the liquid asset side, and if our income need gets outside of that 3.5% to 4.5% range, and if we're over 66 or we're 66 years old, pull it. If you're not working, pull it. Because now with that, usually what we can do is we can get that withdrawal rate now back below or into that target range of 3.5% to 4%, allowing it to continue growing. We don't want to start moving backwards. Hanging even's okay. I mean, we want to be moving up, but we really don't want to start moving backwards. That's where problems come up, right? And so that's going to be a big basis to income planning. What do we do with that? Okay, so once we get that established, like I said, I can't give you one answer. Generally speaking, I think it's best if everybody can wait till 66, because that's when it's going up 12.5. There's other things to consider if you're not working. Generally, I'm going to advocate that you take it at 66, right? Generally. But like I said, it really varies. We need to use it as a tool, and it needs to be deployed judiciously and thoughtfully in such a way as to defend the capital, the liquid capital you have. We are not going to manipulate our liquid capital investments to maximize our Social Security. That's not what we're doing. Social Security should be used to defend those liquid assets. Now, the other side of income planning is tax liability. Where do we want to pull the money from? Again, generally speaking, we're going to build that next. So we got Social Security there as the basement, right? The foundation. And then the next leg up, I'm typically going to use money from retirement accounts. Why am I going to do that? Well, a couple reasons. A, they're going to make you start pulling money out of them at 73 years old anyway, right? And the bigger the amount is in those accounts at 73, the less you are going to be able to control your income taxes, okay? Also, it's the money that is the most expensive capital in your portfolio. Okay, it's the most expensive source of money in your portfolio. So what does that mean? It would tend to mean that ideally you'd want your best growth investments outside of those portfolios. Sometimes it doesn't always work out that way, right? But generally speaking, right, the investments that grow the biggest, you'd want them to be in accounts that have the least amount of tax liability. And everybody's like, yeah, so Zach, why are you advocating that we start using that? A, if a client had money in equal parts, a Roth IRA, a traditional IRA, and a regular brokerage account, there's no question I want them to burn through the traditional IRA before they touch the other two, right? Because every dollar those things go up, it's less tax liability. Here's the other reason. Even though it's going to make your annual your income tax higher, there's no way around it. Like I said, they're going to start forcing distributions at the age of 73. So what we want to do is we want to use Social Security and the money in your retirement accounts, your IRA accounts. We want to use those to create your base income, your base income, if we can. And that way, it gets it really easy for us to lock in tax rates, right? Personal income tax rates. We can really be planning, and we can actually get pretty proficient, pretty surgical about planning, because we know exactly what that taxable income is. And here's the other thing. If something happens that requires a capital need, if a kid, you know, a kid needs money for a wedding, or we got to put a new roof on the house, or we got to pull 150 grand out of it for this investment or something like that, a capital need, these life needs that happen over the course of the year, if we're using the retirement assets for our income base along with Social Security, then we've got the other assets over there that have less tax liability. And most importantly, the tax liability they do have by way of the individual account, the Roth doesn't have any tax liability, but the individual liability has liability, or the individual account has liability on it. It's called capital gains tax, but that's only on the profit, right? It doesn't include what you paid for it. And so typically when we're pulling money out of an individual account, you know, you're paying, I don't know, it all depends on what the cap gains are, but you know, it's usually like a 10 to 12% haircut off the amount, where when we're pulling money out of the IRA, you know, usually the tax haircut is at least 20. You know, in addition to that, though, it's cap gains. Which means what? Even if you got to pull out 150 grand and you got to take $80,000, $90,000 worth of cap gains, that applies only to that. It's not going to complicate or increase your income tax liability. Right? So we're not going to blow up your income tax planning for that year. And it's, that's why we want to focus on the base income, on the retirement portfolio and the Social Security, because A, those other accounts grow with less liability over time, so we want to maximize their growth. And B, when we have an unplanned financial need, we can access the capital without throwing our income planning and tax planning strategy for that year down the toilet. And then other sources of income from there, that's where you would supplement with other parts. Right. So maybe if there's a Roth account and if the combination of Social Security and your IRA don't do it, then we'll go out and look at some income from the Roth account. Or maybe we restructure personal finances and move money around. Maybe we reduce the amount of your home loan. You know, there's all different kinds of things we look at. We're going to look at it holistically and figure out what's the best individually for you. But I wanted to lay out those basics just for even the home goat gamers at home, so they could, you know, just to think about these things. And it's not extraordinarily complex. Now, again, if you're mixing in income from rental, like there's, you know, the more inputs, the more complicated this gets. I'm giving you a pretty rudimentary, but also a fairly common kind of setup and scenario here. And, you know, of course, we want to limit the income as much as we can. But at the end of the day, the client, you know, you got to live. And I tell the clients all the time that I don't want to spend anymore. I go, well, guy, this is what you saved it for. This is what it was all that work and saving and discipline was for. But it's important we just do it the right way, because like I said, I mean, just think about it, right? Like if you're paying a tax rate that is, you know, I don't know, 4-6% higher than it otherwise needs to be if things were laid out properly. You know, think about that amount of money over a 20-year period of time. You're talking not insignificant amounts of capital. The other thing that we can do too is Roth conversions. And a Roth conversion, remember, with a Roth IRA, if you make too much, you cannot contribute. Okay? You can contribute through your kids. But that's another story if you want to talk about that. It's all above board, legal stuff too. But it's like a Roth account, right? Like, or in the sense, or we all love the Roth account because all that growth, all that good stuff. You know, you put, I always say my greatest Roth account story of all time is Peter Thiel, one of the founders of PayPal, took his original shares right after they founded the company and used them as his Roth deposit for the year, right? So the guy has $5 billion completely untouchable by the IRS sitting in a Roth IRA. It's like the most gangster tax move of all time. But anyway, the Roth IRA conversion, how does that work? You know what? We don't have time to discuss it. We got to take a quick break. We'll come right back and I'll lay out the Roth conversion and the role it plays in retirement income planning. But we're going to take a quick break. As always, guys, if this stuff interests you, which tax efficiency planning, risk management, if you're close to retirement, man, this is the stuff. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK and 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com or capitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. Stick with us through the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
With the election looming, continued global unrest, rising cost of living, and this crazy market volatility, the rest of this year could be a wild ride. Protecting retirement portfolios with risk management is critical.
That's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark and host of Know Your Risk Radio's podcast. Zach, at our first meeting, Bulwark opened my eyes to how exposed my portfolio really was.
We do that with everyone. Our Know Your Risk portfolio review is a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. It's free and there's no obligation. In fact, we don't let anyone invest with us at our first meeting. Whether you become a client or not, I can promise you this, you'll leave much more informed about the risks to your retirement.
I know I did. Look, you only get one retirement, so don't risk it. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
Okay, so I got to make this quick. And we are back, by the way. We got to make this quick. Don't have as much time as I thought we did. But I want to get into this because we get asked all the time about Roth conversions. Every year you can make a Roth deposit if you make under, what is it, 200 grand for a couple, I want to say. Maybe they up that amount. Is it 200 grand for an individual? Anyway, whatever. 200 grand for an individual or 200 grand for a couple, one of the two. If you make over that amount though, you cannot fund a Roth account, but everybody, to my knowledge, there might be some exclusion somewhere, but everyone to my knowledge is eligible to do a Roth conversion. So what is a Roth conversion? A Roth conversion is where you move money from an IRA or a 401k, right? When you hear me say IRA or 401k, I use those terms synonymously. Why? Are they the same thing? No, they're different. They're just taxed exactly alike, right? Your 401k is just the IRA that your employee sponsors through your work, right? The taxation and the rules surrounding both are virtually identical. Okay, so they're synonymous. They're treated the same. When you're done with your 401k, we roll it into an IRA. It's taxed exactly the same. But what you can do is you can put money, you can take an infinite amount of money from, let's say you had $2 million in an IRA. You can put that into a Roth, but you have to pay taxes on it. Okay, you did $2 million, you're probably taking a $700,000 haircut. Is that a good idea? It depends. For my client Tom recently, it's probably going to be a great idea. Why? Through a pension and other structured income plan, income in his portfolio, he has very little need at present and probably over the next 8 to 10 years of income off of his actual portfolio. The other thing is he's going to retire in a few years. So his income is going to drop. Well, what we're planning on doing is when his income drops, we're going to start doing Roth conversions at around the same amount that he was bringing in an income. Keep that tax liability right around the same as he was used to paying it. And because he doesn't have an immediate need for the income off his portfolio, it allows us what? It allows us time for that Roth portfolio to grow. right? And hopefully earn back the tax money. And then when we start pulling income, it's 100% tax-free. So at a certain time, we're eventually going to get to the point where Tom will have to pay income taxes on a pension and a Social Security benefit, but not on anything else that he withdraws. Does that mean they're right for everybody? No. But that can be another wonderful way to income plan for somebody that is overfunded for retirement and doesn't have an immediate need for those assets. That can be part of that income plan too. But what I hope you're seeing here is this stuff is really important and it's really complex and there isn't a cookie cutter approach. This isn't about just put your money into this calculator really quick and boom, it comes out. There's more nuance involved here. We need to be creative. We need to maximize. We need to stretch this stuff. Especially these days, right? Think about it. Look at the inflation we're facing and all this other craziness. Making sure that we're tax efficient on how we pull money, that can make a huge difference. As a matter of fact, the difference over the long run of the retirement and getting the tax side right could be greater than the impact inflation has on the portfolio. And if that matters to you, which I think it should, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. And guys, if the other thing with us, there's plenty of times where we get a tax situation or an issue that we don't know. We're not CPAs. You know what we're going to do? We're going to tell you that. We're going to refer you to a CPA, right? We're going to get the answer, but we're not going to pretend like we've got them all. We'll tell you we don't know. It's one thing. I'm always very careful around tax policy. I always give my clients that caveat. Guys, I'm not a tax professional. I'll give you my opinion and what I'm used to seeing. But anyway, if that interests you, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Happy Easter. We got to go. We're out of time. We'll see you next week. Have a great interview next week coming up with Jared Dillian. You're not going to want to miss it. He's the proprietor of the Daily Dirt Nap on CNBC, wrote for Bloomberg. Great guy, funny guy, smart guy. Won't want to miss it. That'll be next week. We will be back with the Daily Dots on Monday. Have a wonderful Easter. God bless you all. We'll see you next week. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.